Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Cork Today replay on C103.
Let's hope we get a lot of those brighter spells that are contained in the middle of that weather forecast, because today, Friday the 24th, is the Irish Cancer Society's Daffodil Day, and want to wish the best of luck to the tens of hundreds of volunteers who will be out all over the country today collecting on behalf of the Irish Cancer Society. And as always, we're encouraging you, please, if you're out and about and if you can afford, please donate and please support the great work of the Irish Cancer Society. They do amazing work. And actually, on the programme this morning, we will chat with a young woman who was diagnosed with cancer, and she talks about the work of the Irish Cancer Society. Now, there are some coffee mornings going on this morning. Cottrell's shop in Ballinhasick, their coffee morning is underway. Also a coffee morning in O'Sullivan's Pharmacy in Bandon. Tomorrow, Saturday, in Tigoliri in Ballinamarov, there is a coffee day going on all day in aid of the Irish Cancer Society, 11 a.m. to 6 tomorrow. Cake sale and raffle on the day. And I'm told that Marion and Helen are hosting a coffee morning in the Temperance Hall on Strand Street in Kanturk today. You're asked to pop in, have a cup of coffee and a chat. If you've gone to hand in any donations of baking, they will be most welcome as well, and every donation will make a difference. And that coffee morning by Marion and Helen in the Temperance Hall in Kanturk is on. It's underway now. It started at 10 until 1 o'clock while the students from Scolvira in Kanturk are on the streets there collecting for Daffodil Day. And I'm also told volunteers are in the square in Castletown Bear, and they're in Super Value in Castletown Bear selling daffodils and collecting on behalf of the Irish Cancer Society. So good luck to everybody involved, and we really do hope a lot of money is raised for what is a wonderful, wonderful organisation. 0818 103 103. John Paul taking your calls this morning. And of course, one of the top news stories, and it's in all of the papers today, is the news that the Gardaí are, as we speak, continuing to question two people arrested in connection with the discovery of the body of a five-day-old baby on a beach in Carrisaveen in County Kerry, and that happened back in 1984. Now, the two people, the man is believed to be in his 60s, the woman is believed to be in her 50s. They were arrested last night. And I suppose what's kind of poignant at the moment is the 39th anniversary of the discovery of little baby John at White Strand in Carrisaveen is 3 weeks from today. We will be remembering baby John on the 39th anniversary. And of course, the body of the baby was found with 28 stab wounds. Now, last night's arrest, very significant development. This cold case review has been underway, and it has been led by Superintendent Flor Murphy, who has said Gardaí are focused on establishing the truth of what happened to baby John. And of course, the case became known as the Kerry Babies case. At the launch of the cold case review, with the cold case review has been going on since January of 2018. At the time, Superintendent Murphy said there was always the belief that the answers to the questions about baby John lay in the Carrisaveen or the close surrounding areas. And it's understood that the investigating team even hold that belief still today, and that was their announcement back in 2018, but they believe it is still the same. Now, the Gardaí, they've 24 hours to question the two people who were arrested yesterday evening. As I say, we'll be talking about it later on the programme today in more detail. But Michael from Castletown Bear was on to say, Patricia, the breaking news of now approximately 40 years ago is only like yesterday. But my God, what a torturous lifetime that has been for Joanna Hayes and for her family. What the Gardaí put that lady through and her family, nothing but nothing will compensate her or them for what they went through. I sincerely hope that this case will finally have some closure and that justice will prevail. He said, I hope that baby John is smiling down on everyone this morning, knowing that finally justice and peace of mind will prevail. Yeah, and I did reference Joanne Hayes when I was teeing up the programme with Ken, in the last hour. What they have been through has been just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. But I'm also very conscious of whoever was responsible, one or more person who was responsible for the death of the little baby John. What kind of a life have they had for the last 40 years? That's like, you can't be involved in something like that and just put it to the back of your mind. When you know, when you go to bed at night and when you close your eyes and try and sleep, and in your sleep, thoughts of what happened must come back to you. I think they've also couldn't have led a very normal life, knowing that that dark secret has been hanging over them. So will we finally get to the bottom of this case nearly 40 years later? Only time will tell. Your thoughts welcome to 0818 103 103. And just staying on court cases, a case that's in all of the papers and pictures going with it, and it was making the news yesterday as well, as to do with this young Dublin girl, Alana Quinn Idris. And she has said that the jail term given to one of her attackers simply isn't justified for the life that she has lost. And it was Darragh Lyons who has been sentenced yesterday, a 19-year-old. He took part in a gang attack that left this young Dublin woman blind in one eye. It was an attack that happened back in the Ballyfermot area in December of 2021. And yesterday, this 19-year-old Darragh Lyons was jailed for 4.5 years after pleading guilty to causing her serious harm and also assaulting her friend, and he also pleaded guilty to violent disorder. But it was after the court case and after the sentencing that Alana Quinn Idris spoke. She was just 17 at the time. She's 19 now. But she expressed her disappointment at the jail term that was given to Darragh Lyons, and asked how she was feeling. She said, "Obviously not very good. Being told what happened to me and the life that I've lost is only worth 4.5 years obviously isn't the best thing to hear." She said, "I have to be like this now for the rest of my life, and in 4.5 years' time, he'll be out of jail and free. I don't really feel that these consequences are justified, considering how I have to be now for the rest of my life." Now, this Darragh Lyons admitted causing Alana serious harm during the assault in Ballyfermot. It was on the 30th of December in 2021. He also pleaded guilty to violent disorder and assault arising from the incident, during which another teenager, this was Alana's friend Lewis O'Sullivan, was also beaten and was also stabbed. Alana lost the use of her right eye after being hit with the saddle of an e-scooter, and she was hit with such force it actually knocked her unconscious. Darragh Lyons, who was before the courts, punched her once in the face during the incident and later jumped over her as she lay prone on the ground unconscious while he was continuing to attack her friend Lewis. The judge yesterday, Martin Nolan, described the attack as premeditated and savage. He said that Alana gave a very, very moving victim impact statement and was deeply affected by the attack. Judge Nolan said he did not believe that Darragh Lyons wanted the victim to suffer serious injuries, but added that he was involved and he was culpable by design. In mitigation, though, he took into account the Darragh Lyons' lack of previous convictions, also his cooperation in the case. He took into consideration his age, saying that young people do irrational and stupid things. Now, he said the maximum sentence for assault causing harm was life, and that the state submitted that the sentence should be between 10 and 14 years. But Judge Nolan said he believed that the headline sentence should be between 8 and 9 years. And taking everything into account, then he sentenced the defendant instead to 4.5 years. Now, there's two other males allegedly involved. They're also before the courts. And there's a third individual who was the individual who is believed actually hit Alana with the saddle. That fourth individual has never been identified. They were described in court as an organised gang of four males who tracked the victims from a distance. In the victim impact statement, Alana said that the vicious and unnecessary attack had destroyed both her confidence and her chance of now leading a normal life. She said, "The life I was supposed to live was taken away from me before I even turned 18, adding that the life she had known came to an abrupt end. She actually went on to say in her victim impact statement that sometimes she wishes that she'd never woken up when she was hit by that object on that day. It's just, and to watch her outside of court, beautiful, beautiful looking girl, and you can clearly see that she has lost the sight in one of her eyes and has left her absolutely devastated. But it's just, what got to me in this particular case was the level of extreme violence. You know, where is that coming from? It seems this gang of four, they got on the same bus, they followed them, and that when Alana and this other young man, Lewis, got off the bus, then they got off after them, the verbal altercation, and then that led to this vicious, absolutely vicious, vicious attack. I mean, where is that extreme violence coming from, and where is it going to, you know, where does it end? Where, you know, and how do we get this level of violence to stop? Now, some, like Alana herself, will point to the fact that it's the sentences. Should the sentences be tougher? And if they were tougher, would it act as a deterrent to other people? I mean, if this that young 19-year-old had gotten a longer sentence yesterday, would other young people look at that case and think, oh, maybe it's just not worth it? Whereas, you know, she makes a valid point. She now live with the what has been done to her for the rest of her life. We're after 4.5 years, and probably with good behaviour he won't even do 4.5 years. He'll be back out and still a young man and able to go on and lead a normal life. So having just referenced the Kerry babies story, you know, and a story that those of us of a certain age can remember, because it's almost now nearly 40 years ago, it'll be 40 years ago next year since that baby was found. A breaking news story of another historical case is the investigation into the disappearance of Annie McCarrick. Remember Annie McCarrick, who went missing, that young American woman? That's 30 years ago. That now has just been upgraded to a murder inquiry. She had been living in Sandymount in Dublin. She was 26 at the time, and she went missing on the 26th of March 1993. So it's coming up to the anniversary of the this weekend. She was from Long Island in New York. She was over in Ireland studying and working. She'd been here for a number of years. Now, there had been a number of reported sightings. There was extensive searches, but no trace has ever been found of Annie McCarrick since she went missing this weekend 30 years ago. And the investigation team in Irish Town Garda Station in Dublin have announced that the missing person inquiry has now been reclassified as a murder investigation. And they're saying the decision to upgrade the story is based on the entirety of the information available to the team, and to coincide with the 30th anniversary of the disappearance this weekend, Gardaí have once again renewed their appeal for information. Again, that's another case that somebody somewhere knows something. And of course, what was, I think, particularly sad about the Annie McCarrick case, and Annie was amongst a group of other women, Deirdre Jacobs, Jojo Dollar. There was a number of women went missing over a kind of a relatively short period of time. But Annie McCarrick's was, I think, one of the really sad, well, they were all really sad, but I think for her family, because she was an only child. And I remember her dad, John, speaking, you know, she was the light of their lives, and the devastation when their only daughter went missing and then never found. And of course, he's gone to his grave without ever finding out what happened to Danny, because he died in 2009. Now, her mother, Nancy, is still alive and living in New York. And it seems that Senior Gardaí flew over to New York and paid a visit to Nancy to update them on the investigation, and no doubt to tell her in advance of the 30th anniversary of her disappearance that it's now been upgraded to a murder inquiry. Some will say that that should have been upgraded many, many years ago, when there was absolutely just nothing was found. So maybe with the reclassification now, something will come out of that particular case.
This is Cork Today on C103.
Email Patricia now with your story or comment. CorkToday at c103.ie.
On this day in 1968, Aer Lingus flight 712 departed from Cork Airport heading to London Heathrow. Sadly, the flight didn't make it and crashed near Tusker Rock off the Wexford coast, leaving 61 people dead. 55 years later, mystery still surrounds what happened to that Viscount plane. Jerome McCormack from Cove joins me on this anniversary to remember his brother Neil, who was the very last to board the plane that day. Good morning to you, Jerome.
Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
I'm very well, and you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you for that nice introduction there.
Well, and I'm very conscious of the day that's in it, and, you know, even looking at the clock, thinking all, you know, 61 passengers and the crew would have been at the airport this day,
exactly
this time,
the time
55 years ago. I suppose, talk to me firstly about Neil and why he was at the airport and why he was on that flight.
Yes, he was 35. He had been working in Glenmore, in County Cork, you know, Glenworth.
I do.
He worked for Quinlan's there in the mills. He was the mill manager for a couple of years, you know, and he was going off to Switzerland to a job interview. So he was travelling through London, you know.
So a lot of excitement for him heading off on this almost a big adventure.
You know, he was employed at an earlier stage before Quinlan's in North Cork. He was an international textile consultant with Werner's of New York, and he was well versed in all that business.
And as a family, when and how did you hear about the crash?
Well, we were sitting down having our lunch, Patricia, on the Sunday. I think it was around 1 o'clock, I think, and it could have been David Timlin or one of the well-known radio news presenters came on, gave the usual news. My mother was sitting there at the table. I was there myself. I was 20 years of age. And the next thing, there was a late news section came on and said that the flight 712 from Cork to London was delayed. And then that was okay. And we heard then shortly, very shortly afterwards, there was another late piece of news which said that the last message from it, which was spinning rapidly, yes. 15,000 feet or 10,000, they weren't absolutely sure, you know.
And then you just had to wait for confirmation?
I had to phone, the airport, and I said, was Neil McCormick on the flight? And she said, yes, you know. So there were 61 very sad people who had to go through that crash, but 61 lots of relatives, friends, you know, had to endure a horrific time.
And out of the 61, Jerome, only 14 bodies were recovered.
That is correct. That's correct, yeah. And one of those bodies was unidentified, you see. I won't go into the details,
okay,
but it couldn't be identified at the time. And I had a feeling, well, who could it be, you see? And I got a lot of cooperation from the county council, the guards, engineering people. Everyone came in on this one, and we had that body exhumed. And was brought to England to have a DNA profile carried out on it, you know. But the DNA wasn't sufficiently advanced enough at that time. And that was around the year 2000. And it wasn't until 16 years later that it began to become clear that it could now be processed for a DNA profile, you know, and then that would be the first step in identifying that body.
Do I take it that Neil wasn't one of the bodies found?
Well, no. Strangely enough, the laboratory and the investigators asked me to be the first to give my profile, you see. So, if I gave my profile, and then it would be matched with the other one, with the one from the remains. And if it matched, then it would have been Neil, you see. But it wasn't. It wasn't him. And they asked me, was I disappointed? Well, I said, I'm not really. I'm not disappointed because, you know, basically, when one family is taken out of the reckoning, well, that it means the chances are greater for the others to become, you know, involved. And all of the Irish relatives, who could possibly have been like a fully grown male, was the body. And it could have been any of 32 different families. And they were all...
And that must even make it harder, Jerome, that you don't have a grave.
Patricia, the people are dead and gone. And, like, you know, we can't be grieving forever and ever and ever. You know what I mean? And we want to move on, I suppose. But at the same time, we want to move on from truth, you know?
That's okay, really just to fill listeners in, to date, what explanation has been given for the crash?
Well, there was in 1970, you had the official report done by Mr. O'Sullivan. He was the chief guy in charge of the AAIU at the time, Air Accident Investigation Unit in Dublin. And I think he did a very thorough search. And in due to aggravation, then in the year 2000, there was a report done by Mary O'Rourke was involved in that, and the British ambassador, and they did a review, which was a civil service type review, which had no outside influence whatsoever. Then 2 years later, there was three guys came in who were, two of them were French and one of them was Australian, and they came and did a study. Now, the first one was a report which was pretty factual because it was right on the spot and was there at the moment of the almost the day of the crash. They were there involved. The review was done, it was a kind of a civil service review done, years and years and years later, sort of paperwork stuff. And then you had the study, which was a huge expensive study done by the Irish government to see if they could find out what went wrong. And they came up with some unusual scenarios. One of them including that a goose had flown up from Wexford and found the plane at 17,000 feet and killed everybody on board.
A bird, what
Then
we
there was
know,
another
yeah,
one.
what we know is a bird strike.
It come bird strike,
Yeah.
yeah. No, no evidence of that whatsoever.
Yeah.
No bone or blood or
And then
any kind of feather.
this ongoing story of a sighting of a second plane.
Yes, there is, because there's living evidence of that, from people who
There
have
was it was
who witnessed it.
eyewitness. Yeah, there was eyewitnesses.
Yes, and they're still there.
But that's been denied.
It hasn't been denied.
Has it
No, it
not?
has not been denied. But it has been brushed aside, in a sense, But it's still there. It hasn't gone away,
Yeah. And
That's the thing.
what do you believe happened?
Well, I mean, I think everyone knows what, down to a very narrow viewpoint. Everyone can kind of have a good guess now, without going into realms of theory or anything like
Yeah.
that. They can have a good educated guess, but you see, you can't pin it down to the final, the final total answer, because it's secretive, and then it's. There's military secrecy there, and you can't get inside that.
Yeah.
It's
And the
difficult,
plane itself, I mean, there had been, I didn't realize this until I was doing some research on it yesterday. There had
Yeah.
been two other plane crashes
There
of the
was
same.
one of them was in near the airport in Dublin, and it was a three man. They were just doing a training flight,
Yeah, for young pilots.
Two young pilots,
Yeah.
and they were young, inexperienced. They were only being taken out by an experienced pilot, and the conclusion that they came to, no, they won't have conclusive proof on it, but the conclusion that they more or less came to was that pilot had a health problem, and that it could have interfered with the monitoring of the plane, or the training flight. It could have interfered with
Okay.
the running of the plane.
Yeah. And the those Vicon planes, they were withdrawn then, weren't they?
They were not. No, they were never withdrawn. That's the funny thing about
Oh,
it.
were they not?
They were
Okay.
not withdrawn because the Viscount was there was 444 of them built, and they were reckoned by lots of pilots. Pilots have opinions about planes, and they were very, very pleased with the Viscount, and it was a very popular plane. It was an English-built plane, but it was in lots and lots and lots of airlines all over the world, and
Okay.
it had been that plane had been with KLM for 8 years, and Aer Lingus bought it from them amongst several others. And the first thing they did was to have that plane totally checked out at in Scotland. Airwork in Scotland did a huge check up on the plane before
Yeah,
they
so
bought it,
technically it was okay.
yes
Yeah, there
yes
was
yeah
yeah,
yeah
okay.
yeah
And are you in contact with other relatives of people who lost
well
loved
I would
ones?
be yeah
Yeah.
I would of course yeah I would be But it's a sad contact, I
I
suppose,
know,
in
I
many
know.
ways, because like it's secrecy, and there things can come out. The truth is there, you see. The truth can't be altered, whatever the truth was, like, I'll accept the truth, you know what I mean, whatever. But it can't be altered. You can't come up with things like geese and things like that and without evidence and say that's what happened, you know.
And in order to get, and I know you're saying, you know, you all have to move on. And I mean, obviously, 55 yeah. years later, you have all yeah. tried to live your lives yeah. and moved
well,
on.
We remember them.
Yeah, yeah. But they absolutely will never be forgotten. But to finally get closure, what you need is the truth. Yeah. I mean, that's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I suppose, yes. And then we can, you know, move on then, you know. Properly, like, you know, but they were not withdrawn. And Mr. Dargan, he was the head man in Aer Lingus. The following morning, on Monday, the 25th of March, 1968, he stated, and it's on record and it's printed, that there was nothing wrong with the Viscount planes, which okay. there wasn't really, because I had flown on the very same plane 3 weeks beforehand from London to Cork. It was my first flight ever. And I flew on that flight from London Heathrow to Cork. And I was so amazed with my first flight kind of thing that I spent a good 10 minutes looking at every single bit of the plane, walking around it. Like, I mean, you couldn't do it now, I'd say.
Yeah,
but that
chance,
time,
yeah,
there was less security, you know.
Yeah.
And I walked around, I looked around, and I came around then to the cockpit part. And I looked up at it and I saw St. Phelim, and it was written in the old style Irish, P-H-F-E-I-D-L-I-M.
Yeah.
It was written on the side of it. I'm sure I didn't know anything about St. Phelim or anything at that stage, you know, but it was my first flight. It was totally uneventful, and it was a lovely flight from Heathrow. And
what should have happened again on this day 55 years ago. Do you still think it's not too late to hold some kind of an oral hearing, a full inquiry?
Well, I absolutely 100% agree that it's the biggest loss of life in this country. It's the biggest loss of life. Whitty was an awful disaster, but it was 51 people. This is 61.
Yeah.
And I did see in my research a letter written by, I won't mention any names now, but someone very high up in government, and a very short letter to say that public inquiry, of course, is inevitable. You know?
But it never happened. Inevitable.
Never happened. You know?
Okay.
Whatever happened, this never happened anyway.
Yeah. Well, listen, we remember all of the 61 people, and in particular your brother.
Yeah, you're very kind.
And
very,
I thank you. Kind. I really do. I appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today.
Well, I appreciate it so much, you know. And next Sunday now, the 26th of March, there's a small remembrance at Shandon Church in Cork. We just ring the bells for 61 names. That's all we do, you
that's
know.
Nice. That's lovely. Nice. Listen, you look after yourself, Jeremy, and thanks for talking to us. Good morning to you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Jeremy McCormick there from Cove, remembering his brother, Neil, and the other 60 people who died on this day 55 years ago. May they all rest in peace. Now, as we've been hearing on the news all morning, a man in his 60s and a woman in her 50s have been arrested in connection with the Kerry Babies case after a DNA analysis enabled a breakthrough in the tragedy. The dead infant was found with multiple injuries at White Strand in Carrick-Sivine, and it's almost 40 years ago. It was April of 1984. Sinead Kelleher is with the Kerryman newspaper, and Sinead joins me. Good morning to you, Sinead.
Morning, how are you?
I'm very well, and you're welcome to the programme. Sinead, what has been the reaction in Kerry to the news of these two arrests?
Well, I think everyone's very, very shocked. I suppose at this stage, 40 years later, many thought there would never be, this case would never be resolved, particularly because I suppose we all know dates back 40 years, but I suppose the last 5 years have been more intensive with the launch of the cold case investigation in January 2018. When that was launched first, you know, everyone was shocked and going, they're going to go back over. But when nothing happened in the intervening 5 years, I think the majority of people thought this case would never be resolved and that the relaunch of the cold case was effectively a waste of time. And then last night, the shocking news came that there had been two arrests in a case that is almost 40 years old now.
And has this case almost hung like a shadow over the Carrick-Sivine area?
I think so, yeah. I think there'd probably be many divided opinions. You know, some would prefer to let, as they say, sleeping dogs lie. That is so long ago now. And others, you know, want to know what happened. I mean, a baby died back in April 1984. And at the time when the Gardaí launched a cold case investigation, they said this. They wanted answers to what happened to baby John. And they have continued to seek those answers.
And Gardaí have always believed that those involved in the death of baby John, that it was somebody local. Isn't that always been the belief?
That's always been a belief, yeah. Because obviously, I suppose back in 1984, again, it's a 40 years ago now, we have to remember, so there wouldn't have been too many for want of a better phrase, outsiders living, you know, in the area or that would have come to Carrigaveen or made their way there, so that they would have believed local in the area. It may not be Carrigaveen, it may be anywhere in South Kerry, but local to Kerry. And the two people arrested, we do know, are from Kerry.
Okay, who gave the baby the name John, by the way?
It was the undertaker at the time, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, because obviously there was no name, nobody knew who this baby was. And DNA technology, Sinead, that's changed so much since 1984, isn't it, hasn't it?
That's absolutely the case. I mean, they actually had a sample from baby John back from 1984, but that wouldn't have been good enough 40 years later to use. So when the cold case was opened in January 2018, they carried out inquiries, and in September 2021, the baby was exhumed and a DNA sample was taken, a better quality DNA sample for the technology that we have available today. And this, we understand, has what led to the arrest now this week.
And the Gardaí still appealing for anyone who has information to come forward.
Yeah, like last night, they said that this was a significant development in the case, but they are still seeking information and will treat anyone that comes forward with sensitivity and kindness. I mean, this still is a very sensitive case. You know, obviously the answers to what happened to baby John need to be found, but there's also a very sensitive case. It was a very different era back then. It's been a case that's shadowed the whole county and country for more than 40 years. So it is very, you know, there's a lot of factors to be taken into account.
And the little grave where baby John is buried in Carrigaveen, that I believe has been vandalised a couple
of
times.
Yes, I can't remember what year now, but that was the case. But that was quite a few, several years ago, and there was some damage done to some of the ornaments on the grave.
Yeah.
That's correct, yeah.
But nobody ever prosecuted for that?
No, nobody was ever prosecuted for that, no.
Okay. And please God, this case can be solved. Do you believe it might bring some closure to Joanne Hayes and her family, who, of course, were so wrongly accused of involvement in the death of baby John?
Absolutely. Well, I think in January, you know, when they relaunched a cold case in 2008, they absolutely ruled out any connection with Joanne Hayes and have since obviously apologised to her. The state has a formal apology. So absolutely, but I suppose it would be just nice for the Hayes family, who more than deserve that they are completely and utterly exonerated, even though this has been done, obviously, and, you know, officially. But I suppose with the truth was out, then we would 100% know what happened, baby John. But I think, you know, at this stage, the case coming up must be very difficult for the Hayes family. It comes up every so often again this week. Now it's in the headlines and her name is associated with, again, when she has, in fact, nothing to do with it at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's happening now? The Gardaí have, I believe, 24 hours to question the two people.
That's my understanding. So they've been in custody since last night. So my understanding is they will remain in custody throughout most of today and this evening. You're obviously taking into account that breaks and breaks from questioning.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we don't know what will happen later today, if anything at all will happen today, but they will remain in custody for questioning throughout this day.
Are they in separate Gardaí stations?
They are. They were arrested and they're in separate Gardaí stations in Kerry, one in Listowel and one in Castle Island, is my understanding.
Okay. All right. As you say, whether we will hear something later on or not, only time will tell. Listen, Sinead, I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today. Thank you for that.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks a million. Bye-bye. That is Sinead Kerry, who is a journalist with the Kerry Man newspaper. On just there's the latest, I suppose, is still the same. They both are being questioned by An Garda Síochána. The man is believed to be in his 60s and the woman is believed to be in her 50s. Arrested last night, 24 hours. But that could go on a little bit longer as well. It's just one of those awful, awful cases. Between that and the news now of Annie McCarrick, 30 years later, this weekend, since she went missing, and her case is to be upgraded to a murder as well. Here's hoping we get to the bottom of some of these cases.
You're listening to Cork Today on replay. Phone and text lines are currently closed.
Can I clarify this? Because I've seen Heidi, and actually there's a couple of other people are bringing up the same topic, but Heidi sums it up in her text saying, "Morning, Patricia. Is it true what I am hearing that Dublin Airport is to start charging to drop off and pick up passengers? I think if this is right, then it is definitely a step too far. The poor old motorist once again been shafted for no good reason. And it'll be just the poor old guys and gals. Bet your bottom dollar they won't be charging government or any of the government officials when they travel in and out of Dublin Airport." Now, just to give you the background of this, the plan for Dublin Airport to charge people if you're dropping off or collecting a passenger has actually been around for the last couple of years. It's the DAA, the Dublin Airport Authority. They have been trying to introduce it, but in order to do it, they had to apply to Fingal County Council, where the airport is, because they needed to get permission for relevant infrastructure to change. Now, they first applied in 2021, and at the time, Fingal County Council turned down the permission, and they reckoned they were against the original plan because they would have been a loss of long-term parking spaces. That was one of the reasons that Fingal County Council gave for not giving the planning permission to Dublin Airport to charge to drop off and collect passengers. That was in 2021. But then last year, this month last year, March of 2022, they went back again to the council, and they were granted planning permission to allow them to charge for drop-off and collecting passengers. However, the council's decision was applied, and then it had to go back to on board Planola. And then on Wednesday of this week, the appeals board published a decision upholding the council's decision to grant planning permission. So therefore, on Wednesday, that cleared the way for the DAA to get to work on their plans, whereby they could charge passengers for drop-off and collection. But I've just seen a Twitter response from Dublin Airport saying, in response to media reports, Dublin Airport has no current plans to introduce drop-off and pick-up charges. So at the moment, but I think the word that I'm picking up in that particular tweet, they have no current plans. So I'm assuming because they've been given the permission from Fingal County Council, which means they can go ahead and do it, it is going to happen sooner rather than later. I don't know, but it's certainly no current plans at the moment. They won't be the first airport in the world to do it. It seemingly is quite common internationally. If you look across the water at our closest neighbours, the UK and their main airports, they all charge. Heathrow Airport introduced it a number of years ago. They also charge at Stansted, Manchester and Birmingham, all charge to drop off passengers or to pick up passengers. In the UK, it's between £3 and £7. And what happens is as soon as you go into the drop-off zone, you then have between 10 and 15 minutes to drop off and collect a passenger. And it can be, depending on the airport, anywhere from £3 to £7. Some see it as a money-making issue. The DAA don't. They say the reason that they want to introduce this, they say it's part of their wider sustainability agenda. Doesn't sustainability get ruled out for anything that's going to cost you and I, the punter, extra money? They are saying that the reason they want to introduce drop-off and pick-up charges, it's aimed at reducing the number of people who use private vehicles to travel to and from the airport. And they say by disincentivizing the use of cars, the DAA believe that more people will use public transport, and that thereby then will result in, they say, the more efficient use of the airport's road network. So they want to stop the number of people who are travelling into the airport just to drop off and collect. So no current plans at the moment. But the reason that it's back in the news and the reason that there's so much talk about it was that on this Wednesday, on board Planola published their decision upholding Fingal County Council's decision to grant planning permission, which now clears the way for the DAA to work on introducing a charge for drop-off and collection of passengers. That is not, certainly hasn't gone down well with some of our listeners who heard the rumours this week. 0818 103 103. A listener, this is responding to the piece I did at the top of the programme, talking about that case that's all over the papers with that beautiful young Dublin teenager, Alana Quinn Idris, who has lost the sight in one of her eye after, what was it, absolutely vicious attack. Herself and her friend Lewis were on a bus in Ballyfermot. It looked like they were deliberately targeted by a gang of four young lads. I mean, the guy who was in court yesterday is only 19, so he would have been only 17 when the attack happened in December of 2021, and he got 4.5 years, and Alana herself felt the 4.5 years wasn't enough. And she, she very much made the point that I'll have to live with this, and live with the loss of her eye for the rest of her life, whereas after 4.5 years, this guy will be back out on the streets. Gemma said, I was listening to you about that case of that poor Dublin girl who lost the sight in one of her eyes, and the boy, the young lad, getting 4.5 years. Could they not have tried him for a crime hate because of her race? Her life has been ruined. He'll be a young man still and probably will get out in under the 4.5 years. Yeah, I mentioned that because there will be, you know, they get off on good behaviour and all of that. No justice is what Gemma said. Well, I didn't at any stage when I was following this case, I didn't at any stage hear anything about a hate crime or that her race came into it at all. They had been targeted. I don't know why. It, from what I can gather from what was reported about the case, it looked like it was the young man, the young boy, Lewis O'Sullivan, who was very badly beaten and stabbed. It looked like it was he was really the target, but obviously she was his friend. And she jumped, you know, she tried to protect him, and then she ended up getting attacked. Because I know at one stage the Gardaí said that she attempted to get in between her friend and the defendant, the guy who was in court yesterday. And then it was at that stage he punched her then in the face. And then the other person who still hasn't been identified was the one who took what seemed to be the saddle off the e-bike and punched her into the face with that, and actually hit her so hard, knocked her unconscious. So we're assuming it was from that blow that she then lost the sight in one of her eyes. So no, I don't think a hate crime or anything to do with her race was mentioned, because I don't think it was involved in this particular case, but it was just a vicious attack. 0818 103 103. And it's just, you know, led me to say, how do we stop this extreme violence in young people? Pat in Fermoy says that he was watching a primetime programme recently. It featured shoplifting. I saw it teed up, but I didn't get to see it. And by all accounts on this primetime programme, it shows that shoplifting is on the rise. Pat is wondering, could shops not tag everything with a location tag? He says the prices have come down on a lot of these tags, and then you could trace back where the item was stolen to. He also feels that those who are found guilty of shoplifting instead of jail time, he says that clearly, and the programme showed it's clearly not working. They should put a curfew on these people, and if any of them are caught out after the curfew, then they can be dealt with. The curfew surely would be better on young offenders. And I don't know, I'm assuming when young people are first before the courts, curfews are used. How successful they are, I don't know. But, and of course, the shoplifting affects all of us, because if the shops are losing a lot of their items through shoplifting, ultimately we all end up paying, because the shop has to keep in business. So everything else will go up in price if there's a lot of shoplifting going on. So everyone suffers. It's not just the shop owner that is losing out. 0818 103 103. And a kind of an example of some bizarre driving. Marion was on to say she was driving one afternoon this week on the South Link, and she said a driver near next to her started swerving, you know, which obviously then spooked Marion to go, God, what's this person swerving for? So when Marion looked over at the driver to see what was going on, Marion says, swear to God, hand on heart, she witnessed it. She reckons the person driving the car was reading a book at the same time. She said it very nearly could have caused a pileup. And I don't know if the driver, because I know Marion was speaking with Jean-Paul, I don't know if the driver was a male or a female. Now, we've all witnessed somebody swerving, and when you look, you'll see somebody on a mobile phone trying to read a text or trying to send a text. We've certainly seen that before. But to actually witness somebody driving a car while holding a book seems absolutely bizarre. And Marion, you're right, that could have caused a very, very serious pileup, because that South Link is a busy, busy road. 0818 103 103. Jean-Paul's taking your calls. Text WhatsApp 0862 103
103. C103 Jobs.
A motor mechanic is wanted for CVRT Centre. They're based in Blackpool. CVRT training can also be provided. CVs please to garage@dcronanmotors.com. Now, the Chair Hair Salon, they're under new management, and they are now looking for two new hairstylists to join their team. They're based in George's Quay in the city. You send your CVs please to owner at chair.ie. An experienced machine driver is wanted for work in Mallow. Jobs at hamiltonfrench.com. And an accounts assistant is wanted to work in the Hibernian Hotel in Mallow. CVs, please, to the attention of Joseph. And you send your CVs to info@hiberniahotelmallow.com. You'll find all the details and more job opportunities by going online now. Just go to c103.ie/jobs for more. This is C103.
Cork Today on C103.
With Corrigan Insurance's Macroom, now part of McCarthy Insurance Group. For motor, home, business, farm, life and health insurance. CMIG.ie.
This is Cork Today on C103.
Email Patricia now with your story or comment. CorkToday@c103.ie.
Tomorrow at the Cork Unitarian Church on Princes Street, Peter Keenan will be launching his latest book. And the book is called The Death of Jesus the Jew. And the guest speaker will be Father Tony Flannery, a man we haven't spoken to in quite some time. So I'm delighted to say that Father Tony joins me on the programme today. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Patricia, and lovely to be speaking to you again.
Well, it is just fantastic to speak with you, and it is hard to believe now that it's over 10 years since you were suspended by the Vatican.
It is. This time 11 years ago, I was in the middle of it.
And how are you doing since?
Oh, actually not too bad really now, Patricia. If you have any cure for old age, I'm 76 now and moving on. It's strange, the whole thing. You see, a lot has happened in the meantime. Like, for instance, with all the synodal stuff in the Catholic Church and in Ireland, what I find now is everything I ever said and wrote about that was objected to by the Vatican has now become official church positions in the synodal movement. And it's all very strange. And I'm saying to myself, like, I hear bishops now saying things that I was suspended for saying. And I was saying, oh, why the hell am I still sidelined?
Yeah, like you are effectively still gagged. And you're right. What you were writing about is now discussed in many public forums of the Catholic Church.
Yes,
and thankfully so.
Indeed. And I'm delighted to see it happening. I was at the famous meeting in Athlone last June in which the synthesis was being presented of all the reports from the different dioceses and groups and everything about the synodality discussions. And all the bishops were there present too. And I was sitting there amazed, hearing things like the ordination of women, reforming church teaching on sexuality, particularly on LGBT, renewing the whole notion of priestly ministry and who's open to ministry, and all those things that I was considered a heretic for saying. And I mean, I wasn't the only one saying them. I don't for a minute suggest that others were saying them too. For some reason or other, I tended to get hammered a bit more than the rest.
You seem to be the thorn in their side for whatever reason. And have you ever had the chance to appeal that decision?
Oh, not at all. There was no... That's the other big thing about it. The whole system is so abusive and unjust. Like, not only is there not an appeals process, but I was discussed, the decision was made, the penalties were decided on before I even knew the process had begun. And then I was hauled over to Rome and I was presented with a document outlining the awful things I had written and said and the punishments that were to be inflicted on me. And that was it. There was no comeback and there was no way that I would even be talked to. It's a crazy system, Patricia. And it's extraordinary, you know, for a church that rightly talks so much about the need for justice and fairness and the equality and all of that, is still running a system within itself.
And in the practical terms of it, it means, can you still say Mass but just not in public?
Exactly. I can say Mass privately. Yeah. But it's ironic. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow in the Unitarian Church, because it will be actually my first time speaking in public in Cork
since.
And I had done so many missions in Aveen. I think I preached in every church in Cork City.
You were very well known, very very well known.
Did
I read somewhere that your sister passed away and you couldn't even say her mass?
Oh God, yeah. Geraldine died about 18 months ago up in Toom. Now, before that, my brother Peter died, who was also a Redemptorist. And he died in Limerick in the Redemptorist Monastery. So the funeral was in the Redemptorist Church. Now, there was no difficulty about me saying that mass. Either the Redemptorist authorities or indeed the bishop in Limerick made no issue about it at all.
Great.
So when Geraldine died in Toom, then I was presuming there wouldn't be a problem about me saying her mass in the cathedral in Tuam. But I asked permission. I went through the administrator and he said he'd have to consult the bishop. Geraldine was still alive at this stage, but very close to the end. And the way it worked out was horrible, actually.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Patricia, I had spent the night with Geraldine, and then I was briefly gone away from the nursing home where she was dying, and I was in my car, and I got a phone call from the administrator, the priest in charge of the cathedral, and it was literally as blunt as this. He said to me, "The Archbishop said no," just that. The Archbishop didn't talk to me at all. That's the only message I got. And then 15 minutes later, I got a phone call to say Geraldine had died. So that was fairly horrible by any standards.
That is beyond cruel, Tony.
It is. Now, what we did actually, Patricia, worked out great. You see, it was COVID times.
Yeah.
And the restriction at the time was a maximum of 50. But Geraldine had a nice sunroom at the back of her house, and it was a lovely August day. So we actually had the funeral in the house with the body laid out in the sunroom and people in the lawn out back. It was all glass, and we had the microphone and we had cameras, and it was a lovely funeral compared to what it would have been in a big cathedral with only 50 people.
Doesn't God work in mysterious ways?
I know, so
he
it worked
really
out
does.
Very well. But at the same time, the fact that the Archbishop didn't even ring me personally, I found that so hard.
Yeah.
I say, of all the things that happened to me, oh God, I sound like self-pity here.
No.
And the man has retired.
Has
now,
he? Okay. Okay, all right. And listen, I know we regularly chat with Father Tim Hazelwood, who is obviously very capable in doing what in singing the praises of the Association of Catholic Priests, the group that you founded. They're calling for your suspension to be lifted, so you do have support.
I do, I know, and it's great. They issued a very strong statement. In fact, three different lay church reform groups have also joined in to back that statement, calling on the church authorities and the Redemptorist authorities to do so. I suppose there is a sense in which now, because of the age I'm at, unless something is done soon, it won't be done at all. So,
would you like to return to full ministry?
Well, it isn't so much that, Patricia. I would like to have the thing lifted.
Yeah.
Because there is a sense of an injustice about it. And I'd like to have that cleared up. Now, whether I do much ministry at this hour of my life is another matter, and that's okay. But I wouldn't like to go to my grave with this thing hanging over me. I think that would be important. And what the church has tended to do, like there are loads of other examples like myself, what the church has tended to do is wait until a person is on their deathbed. And then they come in, they did it a bit with Father Sean Fagan, the Maris priest, and make a big deal out of lifting his sanctions and allowing him to say Mass when his mind was gone and he was actually dying. So it was a meaningless exercise. So I don't want that to happen with me. If they're going to do it, now is the time to do it. I'll forget about it.
Where is this kind, caring, compassionate church? Where's
And Francis has it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
In so many ways. And I'm a great admirer of Francis, and I think he's doing great work for the church. But there you go. That's it.
Okay. Now, we invited you on to talk about the book. And of course, I'm going to talk to you about the book. It's called The Death of Jesus the Jew. Now, the book is a reinterpretation of the New Testament through Jewish eyes. What does it reveal when you look at the New Testament through Jewish eyes?
Well, there are two things. See, one of the things that has happened when Francis came in and he made a statement, I'm paraphrasing it a little bit, he said he wants people to speak their truth and to speak openly and without fear. And for months, Francis said that a whole new mood developed in the church, because under John Paul and Benedict, there was a lot of fear and people were afraid to speak, and particularly scholars. But Francis set the scholarly process going again in the church, and especially the study of the Bible. And what's becoming a big issue now is the Bible, particularly is the New Testament, a historical book, or is it something else? In other words, is what is described in the New Testament actual historical accounts of what happened? Now, Peter is saying in his book that it isn't. This is written from a different perspective. And when he writes about the death of Jesus, well, maybe it didn't happen exactly like that. And the book is about that. It's fascinating. It's challenging. It's very, very interesting.
Is it a book, though, that's going to divide people? I take it not everyone's going to agree with Peter's viewpoints.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But you see, that's part of the whole process that Francis has set loose. Open up the discussion. And if we can have discussion without division, and that's what he means by the synodal thing, that people listen to each other's views. Now, I won't be the only one speaking. There is a much more distinguished scripture scholar than myself, dear Madame Maricou, who I understand is also going to speak, and I'd be fascinated to hear what Diarmuid will make of Peter's book. I think Peter's book is not an easy read, and it raises a lot of questions that would be new to me, and I'd be trying to figure out myself, like, where do I stand in relation to some of the things Peter was saying? But I don't mind that, because I think that's a good thing.
So you suggest, for people who would consider reading this, you need to come to this book with an open mind?
Very much so. Yeah. You need to come to this with an open mind. And don't allow yourself to be shocked by some of the things he says. These are part of the debate that's going on at the moment. And it's very, very interesting.
And debate is healthy.
I think debate is healthy. Now, Francis is trying to do it with this notion of discernment. And what that's really all about is that we have to be open to alternative views to our own. That we should never come to discernment with the conviction that we're right and the other person is wrong. Mm. Now, that's difficult stuff, as you probably know, because I'm always inclined to think
we
that.
All like to think we're right.
Oh,
listen,
we do,
it's been an absolute pleasure once again connecting with you, Father Tony. You'll be in the Unitarian Church tomorrow on Princes Street at 3. It's open to everybody. You can get signed copies of the book because I know Peter Kennan is going to be there as well.
Yes.
And people can go along. Enjoy your trip to Cork, Tony, and we will talk again.
Thanks very much.
God bless. Take care. Bye-bye. The wonderful, wonderful Father Tony Flannery. It's just that man has just been so wronged in what they have done to him, and it's absolutely fantastic to chat with him, because I say we haven't spoke with him. I don't know, is it since the censure? We would have spoken with him after he was suspended, but then obviously we haven't spoke with him that much over the last 11 years, so thrilled to be able to catch up with Father Tony Flannery once again. Now, a few years ago at an outside broadcast from the Grand Parade, my next guest joined me to provide some musical entertainment. Well, Dylan Brickley, a well-known Cork city busker, joins me once again in studio ahead of the launch of his brand new single called Close to You. Great to see you, Dylan. Good morning to you. How's life?
Life's good. Couldn't be better now at the moment. I'm very excited and I can't wait to get this single out. I've worked so hard on it, and I think it could be one of the biggest releases of the year from an independent artist.
Well done. Well done. Were you always writing music? To me, I knew you as somebody who did covers.
Yeah, well, the covers work, you know, for the busking, you know, because everyone's familiar with the songs. But I have been writing songs in the background and just trying to get them out there. But yeah, the last couple of years I've been working hard now on my originals, and I think I have something going good here.
Yeah.
And with the help, my TikTok and Facebook and all my social medias are blowing up at the moment, so, and we're getting big crowds busking, so I'm just saying, if they get behind the music, and I think the music is good, so I think you don't know where it might take you.
Yeah, yeah. And when, take me back, your musical journey, you started when? When did you start singing and playing guitar?
So I was singing from a young age in school, we'll say. I'd done a talent show when I was about 15, no experience, and got up in front of 600 students. I ended up forgetting the words to Colin Ray, Love Me, it's called.
Yeah, I know the song.
And after that then, I started posting YouTube covers, but I didn't play an instrument at the time. So then a couple of years later, when I was about 18, I started learning the guitar from YouTube, and I used to get up every morning and just put in hours upon hours just to try and learn the likes of Oasis, Wonderwall. I just wanted one song, and then that led to about 15 songs. And then I started busking when I was 19, and I can remember the first day I went in, I was very nervous, but I went down inside in town on Winthrop Street, just by Smith's, and started playing, and it went actually good. I had no amplifier at the time now, but since then, it's been crazy, like the places I've been. I'm after getting gigs all over the place.
We have a good tradition in Cork for buskers, don't
Brilliant,
we?
Brilliant, yeah. The support is unbelievable as well. Since I've been playing, everyone's after getting behind me, and can't thank them all enough.
Yeah, and people stop and listen. It's not just a case of somebody walking by.
No.
It's like you gather a crowd around you.
And since returning home from travelling, the people are actually staying listening for maybe an hour or two, like sitting down listening. And it's crazy because it could be really cold and I'd be thinking like, how are they actually sitting here listening? But they're just connecting with the music and just getting a good fan base around the place. So.
And are you putting your new stuff in now when you're busking? Are
yeah.
Yeah.
So the last year, I have this song about a year. I wrote it about a year ago. So I'd include it in my busking set list, play it at gigs. And the reason I actually recorded the song was because of these people that would stop and listen, and they'd ask me like, who sings that song? And like, that's crazy for a busker to get, you know. Mm. And I'd be proud in and say, oh, that's my song. And they kept on saying to me, they were like, you need to record that song, you know, it's a radio hit, you don't know where it might take you. So I made a promise to myself after Christmas, I want to work hard on originals and get into the studio straight away and just see what happens.
Okay, we have a piece. This is Close to You. This is Dylan's brand new single. That's just a clip from that new single called Close to You. That's incredible. That is really, really good.
Thanks very much.
Well done, well done. Tell me the process. Where did you record?
I recorded it inside in Cork City with a producer.
Okay.
And yeah, he's after putting a lot of hard work into it as well. His name is Axel. And yeah, I think we've a great song there. And that's just a little clip. I don't want to give too much away yet.
I know, because you're not officially launching it until next month, isn't it?
Yeah.
But was that whole process of recording, though, is that all new to you? Have you recorded before?
I've done a bit in the past, to be honest, yeah. But we got this song done pretty quick because I had, like, I used to sing it when I was busking and stuff, and it was fairly easy to do, but yeah, I'm very happy with it.
It's excellent. It's excellent. Have you the makings of an album written already, do you think?
Yeah, I've a good lot of songs ready to go, and the song I'm working on at the moment, after this release, I think it's another banger. So, yeah, I'm definitely going down the lines of releasing an album at some point. And like, my end goal is maybe for the end of this year to just get my songs out there and maybe put on a show for the people that can come in and listen to original music.
Brilliant.
And
very brilliant.
Yeah, that's the
and
goal.
What is the ultimate goal? Is it for some record company to hear you, an A&R man to pick a woman to pick you up and go, this guy has it?
So
the ultimate goal.
The ultimate goal, through all the social media is blowing up at the moment. Like, they're blowing up with like cover songs and stuff, and I just want it to be for original music, and maybe for someone out of a label to say, look, he has something good here, let's have a chat with him and see what he can bring to the table. And you never know as well with Spotify, like, it's coming out on Spotify and iTunes and stuff, but if you can pre-save the song and it helps get the song into a Spotify playlist.
Okay.
Like emerging artists or artists on the rise. So that's what I've been trying to tell people on my socials, to pre-save the song for free.
Okay.
And it just takes 5 seconds. You just log in with your Spotify or your email, and it can help out the musician or artist so much.
Yeah,
so that's the goal.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to be encouraging the new talent. That's, you know.
Definitely.
Okay, and I saw you before Christmas. You were out busking for Katrina and Penny Dinners.
Yeah.
Great guy. What did you do? That was a one day event, was it?
Yeah, it's a one day event. I always try and help out when I'm back. I'm back from travelling now about 2 or 3 years, so it's great to help out Cork Penny Dinners. They do amazing things, and I've done it a good few years now, but this year, or the year just gone, it was the biggest we've done so far. So I was thinking, I might as well like get onto all the Cork musicians that I know from busking and create a big show for all the families coming in for Christmas shopping. And the crowds we had was unbelievable. It was crazy.
And people are extremely generous when they hear anything to do with Katrina and Cork Penny Dinners, because people know how important their work is.
Oh, it was unreal. We raised thousands for them, and Katrina Toomey was delighted. She brought the choir with her, High Hopes Choir.
Yeah.
And oh, it was insane. Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to it again this year.
Already planning for next Christmas. You mentioned you've been travelling. You were in Australia. You were in Asia. Talk to me about Asia. You were there during the lockdown for COVID.
Yeah, so I was after leaving Australia. My year visa was up, and I said I'd go to Asia to do a bit of solo travelling, see how I got on. And I was going to go to New Zealand after that then for a year or two. I was in Bali first for 2 weeks, went to Kuala Lumpur, and then I ended up going to Cambodia. So I was on my own, just meeting a few solo travellers, met some great friends along the way. And as we were travelling down through Cambodia, I ended up on an island called
As you do.
It was called Koh Rang, and amazing island, lovely things to see out there, and good nightlife. And one night I was just there, and the guitar came out, singing a few songs after a few beers, and I met this guy who owned a lot of venues and resorts, and he just offered me a job on the island. So I ended up, for what it was supposed to be a 3 month holiday, I ended up staying there 8 months during the lockdown. So it was crazy.
Great place to be for the lockdown.
Unreal.
Okay. Listen, well done. You're still busking in Cork?
Yeah, I haven't been out much now since Christmas over the weather, but in the lead up to my song, I'm going to be out every weekend and just trying to promote it the best I can.
Okay, listen, we wish you good luck with it. I think you've got a real... you have a real winner. It's a fabulous, fabulous song, and let it be the first of many, Dylan. But listen, it's a pleasure to have had you in studio today. Thank you for
Thanks
that.
Thanks very much.
That is Dylan Brick.
You're listening to Cork Today on replay. Phone and text lines are currently closed.
As we've been reminding you all week and again all morning, today is the Irish Cancer Society's National Daffodil Day, where we're all encouraged to please support the great work of the Cancer Society. My next guest is a young Newmarket woman, Jennifer Sheehan, who joins me to talk about the help and support she has received from the Irish Cancer Society. Good afternoon to you, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you, Patricia?
I'm very well, and thank you for joining us on the programme. I know you were diagnosed with breast cancer only last year, so I suppose the first question is, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I'm actually cancer-free officially since last week, which is brilliant.
Is that amazing to get that call to hear that you're cancer-free? Okay, and take me back then to last year when you were first diagnosed. Did you react very quickly to finding a lump?
Yeah, so I suppose it kind of started with a small lump that I was able to kind of brush aside. There was a lot going on at the time. My grandmother was actually in hospital, so I was very much focused on that. But it got to a point where it was actually so big that I couldn't mistake it. You know, like they'd usually be talking in millimetres, and this was 6 centimetres, so it was quite big. So I went to the doctor about it, and they put me on antibiotics and stuff. They thought it was a cyst, and they thought it was an infected cyst, and the antibiotics just weren't working, you know. And I kept going back, and they finally said, look, this is obviously something that's not clearing, so we'll kind of refer you on to the Crowdens UH. And I got in then, and I was diagnosed, I suppose, in September. So it all kind of snowballed from there, really. Like, you know, you're diagnosed, and then you're basically straight on to oncology, you know, and then they go through the chemo with you or whatever. So it's very much step after step after that.
Because you're only in your very early 20s. I mean,
yes.
Was cancer the very last thing you were thinking of?
Oh, definitely. And I suppose, like, I had just lost my grandmother, you know, and that day was the day that I found the cancer, like, you know.
Oh, goodness.
So it was all happening. And it was actually my birthday as well.
Oh.
So it was all happening on the one day. But I suppose, like, it was in the family. So two of my aunts did have breast cancer before me, but they were in their 40s when they got it. So obviously I wasn't thinking about it at all, you know. But there was a bit of a feeling, you know, something wasn't right. There was a bit of discharge coming from the nipple, and I just knew it was so stubborn that there was something not right with it. And that's why I kept going back.
Yeah, because in the majority of cases, it is only a cyst. But I suppose your gut,
yeah,
your gut starts to tell you there's something more to this. So you get that at the time, I imagine, a devastating diagnosis, Jennifer, in September, to be
yeah,
told.
Yeah, I went into complete shock, to be honest. Like, there was part of me that kind of had an inkling that there was something going on. You know, I was sent in and I got examined, and the doctor just kind of, he passed a comment like, oh, that's very close to the skin, or, you know, he was saying, like, there was certain hints, you know, that I was getting. But he said with every kind of hard element, if there's a hard element to the lump, they have to biopsy it. And, like, I knew they were paying a bit more attention to me. So in a way, it was a shock. But in a way, it was also a little bit, like, I kind of knew it was coming in a way. But obviously nothing will prepare you for something like that.
For,
you know,
hearing it, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, I think my parents were nearly more devastated than
God
I was. Like, I was kind of in shock. They were more so, like, upset straight away, but it took me a while to kind of process it, I suppose. And, like, in a way, I still am, you know, like, I'm still going through the whole thing, but it's something that I've kind of come to accept, I think, especially in the last couple of weeks even. You know, so.
And the one thing, you know, we might give out about our healthcare system and people on waiting lists,
yeah,
and people trying to get into A&E and people trying to access various therapies. But the one thing, Jennifer, anytime I speak to anyone who's ever received a cancer diagnosis, people talk about once you get into that system, it's,
yes,
fantastic.
It is. And, you know, I know that, like, for the next however long, however many years, I will obviously be thinking, oh, will it come back? But at least I know now that I'm on their radar. So, like, if it does come back, they'll know straight away, you know.
And how quickly did treatment start, and what treatment did you receive?
So I was diagnosed in August, I suppose, and it started, so chemotherapy started in October. And I had 6 rounds of chemotherapy. The first round was horrendous. Oh my God, it was very bad. I was on steroids and I wasn't sleeping and I got a bit of psychosis from it.
Oh,
I was up all night and I was kind of hearing things for a while. But they gave me something to counteract that and that kind of brought me back down a bit. But that's actually something that can happen. But then they will say they kind of trial run the first round and they see how you react. And then they base the rest of it on how you reacted to the first round. So they changed a few things up for me and it got easier as it went along, thank God. I was able to actually get out and go for walks and things. For the first round, I wasn't even able to get out of bed hardly, unfortunately. But like it's just a kind of trial and error thing. And then I had surgery only last week. And I'm going on to immunotherapy now for 12 rounds, I think. And then there's a bit of radiotherapy as well. So I'll be busy enough with it.
Yeah, but you're cancer free thanks to the chemotherapy,
yeah,
which is just incredible. It really is incredible. And Jennifer, you used something that's called the Irish Cancer Society's Peer Support Programme. Talk to me about that and how it helped you.
So I suppose I got in touch with them fairly straight away through my liaison nurse. Like they were giving us out like leaflets and stuff on where to go from there, you know, and supports. And I got in touch with them fairly quickly. And I suppose the peer support group kind of helped me through chemotherapy. So I got in touch with a woman who had triple negative breast cancer. So breast cancer is kind of all about receptors. Like, and when you're tested like under pathology, like your biopsies or whatever, they can tell you how many receptors are positive or negative. She had triple negative and I had triple positive. So we were kind of different, but similar in the same, like mine would have been a bit more rare and so was hers. So I was able to talk to her about that. And like she gave me tips on, you know, chemotherapy and how to beat nausea and side effects and all that. And I suppose they had a webinar as well that I attended and it was about like just information on chemotherapy and kind of similar stuff like that, like telling us about the side effects and how to deal with them. And I suppose they were directing me towards the Daffodil nurses as well. Now, I never personally used them. I didn't have too many questions. I couldn't think of any really. But if my liaison nurse was off, like, you know, she, like, for example, now she doesn't work on a Wednesday, I would be able to go to them, you know. So it's a very important service, I suppose.
And it's completely free. Because of days like today.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
Yeah,
like.
It really is great. Did you lose your hair?
I didn't. It kind of came out in chunks a bit.
Okay.
So it thinned out a small bit, but I didn't actually ever go fully bald.
Okay.
Now, I did make the decision to shave my head all right because it was just gone to the stage where it was falling out and it was going into my soup and what I was eating and stuff. But no, it never fully went. And I kept my eyebrows and my eyelashes as well, which is very good. Like,
okay, because I
think that's all down to like they changed the medications and stuff. So my chemo after the first round wasn't very intense. And after the first round, actually, the lump completely melted away. So that was brilliant. Like, you know, so you got to see the progress as you went along.
And breakthrough in cancer is, and of course we've got the wonderful Cork Breakthrough Breast Cancer as well, and I know the Irish Cancer Society put a lot of their money into research as well, and we're getting so many breakthroughs. It's completely different now. Different now to what it was 30, 40 years ago, where, you know, I mean, we didn't even speak, but we used the term, the C word, you know, you were afraid to even say it. It is completely different. And Jim,
and I suppose, like, compared to my aunt and stuff, we'll say my aunts that got it, you know, it's, I'd say they had it about maybe 12 years ago. And there's so many new things now on the scene, like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, Jim says, Patricia, great to hear Jenny with a good news story about cancer for a change. Hopefully she will stay cancer free now. Fair play to her for sharing her story. She sounds like a very strong and positive young lady and hopefully will help other women to check themselves and get regular checkups at their doctors. Thanks for that, Jim.
That's it.
And
it's
that's
so
your
important
message, I'd say, Jennifer, is it today?
Sorry?
I'd say that is your message to others, particularly young women.
Yeah, like, I suppose my message is you're never, unfortunately, too young to get cancer. Like, you know, if you ever find anything, go about it. Like, it doesn't matter what's happening in your life. I completely, when I found it, I just dropped everything and went straight away, you know. And I suppose trust your instinct. If you think that there's something wrong, you're better off getting it checked than leaving it go, you know, because I was lucky with mine that it was so big I couldn't kind of brush it off for a finish. But some women have like very small lumps that kind of go under the radar, you know. So it's just really important.
Okay, well done, well done. Listen, are you back working, study? What are you up to life-wise?
So I deferred the year because my immune system and everything would be down from chemo. You know, there was no point in kind of going to college with it. And of course, like you'd have to. But I'm hopefully going back to MTU. I'm studying marketing. I would have been going into my final year, but I'm hopefully going back to that now in August or September. So fingers crossed.
So at the moment, you're at home with mammy and daddy looking after you.
That's it. I'm just kind of relaxing and taking it easy, you know.
Well done. Well done. Listen, fantastic to speak with you today, Jennifer. Continued good health. And thank you for sharing your story. As you say, even if only one person reacts to what you're saying today, you know, a life could
be
saved.
It.
And for all of us, please go out and support the work of the Irish Cancer Society. Jennifer, thank you for that.
Thanks a million, Patricia.
Good afternoon to you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. What a lovely young woman. That's Jennifer Shahin from Newmarket on her cancer journey. Just on a breaking news story, Graeme Dwyer has lost his appeal against his conviction for the murder of Elaine O'Hara. The Court of Appeal found that the limited admission of call data could not give rise to a miscarriage of justice and has not upheld any ground for appeal. It now means the 51-year-old architect who was found by a jury to have stabbed the 36-year-old woman to death back in August of 2012 will remain in prison to continue his life sentence. He was, of course, convicted in March of 2017 and has been in custody since his arrest in 2013. But he has lost his appeal against his conviction. That's Graeme Dwyer. 0818 103 103. Our lines are open.
The C103 Cork Diary.
With Cork County Council, where communities and businesses all across the county can get the support they need at corkcoco.ie.
Bingo will be held in Mallow GAA Complex tonight, 8:15. They've got a jackpot, €5,500. Kildallery Bingo also on tonight, 8 o'clock. That's at the store at the Creamery Yard. Doors open at 7. The jackpot, €1,440. And there's dancing tonight to Brian McDermott in Kilbeheny Community Centre. It starts at 9 o'clock. Admission is €10 and teas will be served. There will be a performance of The Field by John B. Keane. That's in Rathgormack Community Hall tomorrow, Saturday. It's in aid of the Rathgormack Men's Shed. And a coffee morning in aid of the Scott Corsican Fund will be held at Kilbeheny Community Centre. That's next Sunday and it's from 11:30 onwards. And also on Sunday at 7 o'clock, a concert will take place in Kilgariff Church, Clonakilty, Church of Ireland. The proceeds with the donation will be given by the day on the door on the day. There's no charge. You can give what you would like. And proceeds will go towards victims of the Turkish-Syrian earthquake. The Irish Red Cross appeal. Taking part, Clonakilty Voices, the Valley Voices. There will also be a cello piano duo and local pianist Tomás O'Hay. The concert will last for about 80 minutes.
Cork Today on C103.
With Corrigan Insurance's Macroom, now part of McCarthy Insurance Group for motor, home, business, farm, life and health insurance. See MIG.ie.
This is Cork Today on C103.
Email Patricia now with your story or comment. corktoday@c103.ie.
And I know we are continuing to encourage people to support the Irish Cancer Societies today on Daffodil Day. Bernice, who's on Morrison's Island in the city, has sent in a text saying, Patricia, would you remind people that this weekend there is a special epilepsy day? I think it's a World Epilepsy Day. Bernice has had epilepsy since she was 2 years of age and said she'd be lost without the fantastic work of the Epilepsy Association of Ireland. And it's actually Purple Day. It's a kind of a, it's a worldwide fundraising event that happens this weekend, where they encourage people all over the world to wear purple in support of people with epilepsy. And I know here in Ireland, for example, they'll have wristbands. You'll probably see them on sale, and they're encouraging people to wear any kind of purple, a purple ribbon, whatever, just to support the work of the Epilepsy Association in Ireland. So you might come across that at the weekend, because it is happening. It's the World Purple Day is this weekend. So good luck to everybody involved in that. Now, some of your thoughts and comments coming in. Some reaction to the wonderful chat I had with Father Tony Flannery. And I really enjoyed my chat with him. And I realised when I was chatting to him how much I miss talking with him. He's such a lovely, kind, caring, compassionate man who has just always been so full of empathy. And what happened to him 11 years ago when he got suspended by the Vatican, and even to hear him talk about it, you can still hear the pain in his voice. No grounds to appeal. They simply didn't like what he was saying. And I mean, really what Father Tony was only ever trying to do was trying to drag the Catholic Church kicking and screaming into the 21st century. And the irony is that 11 years after he was suspended, a lot of what he was talking about is now openly spoken about within the Catholic Church. But it almost feels, just because the decision was made, nobody has got the guts to say we were wrong on that, or we need to change our mind on that. And they're leaving him now in this dreadful limbo almost. I mean, to hear him talk about his beloved sister passing away and the Archbishop refusing to allow him to say Mass for his sister is just cruel, beyond cruel. Mara says, feels so sorry listening to Father Tony Flannery on the programme today. And Mara says, I say that even though I wouldn't have a lot of time for priests nowadays, but he feels that this man, Father Tony, was bullied for simply telling the truth. Is that not typical of the Catholic Church? He said, is it any wonder that the Church is finding it hard to get people to join the priesthood? This kind of behaviour surely is turning young people off the Catholic Church. And then Kathleen in Cork City said, how wonderful it was, Patricia, to hear Father Tony's voice on the programme today. She said, I can still see him on the altar steps of the church telling us about the other side of the prodigal son. It was absolutely beautiful. I wish him well. And be assured, Father Tony, says Kathleen, that God does love him. Yeah, because he was a redemptorist priest, so he would have been all over the country. Certainly he was. There wasn't a church, I'd say, in Cork that he didn't at some stage do the, you know, the famous redemptorist retreats. I know they still go on. They're not as common as they used to be, but he was very much a part of that team. So thank you for people just wanting to recognise the wonderful Father Tony Flannery. Now on, this is on what I mentioned earlier about Dublin Airport, and they've now got permission from Fingal County Council that will allow them to introduce a system whereby if you're dropping off or collecting passengers at Dublin Airport, you will be charged. Don't know yet how much it's going to be. The only thing they've come out and say to say, Dublin Airport, is to say, because they've got a lot of media requests asking them when are they going to start introducing it, and they've just said Dublin Airport has no current plans to introduce drop off or pick up charges. But as and from last Wednesday, the Onboard Pranála published their decision, which has upheld the council's decision to grant planning permission, which clears the way for the DAA to get to work on their plans. And their plans will one day be that every time you go to the airport, if you're just dropping off or collecting somebody, you will be charged, similar to what happens in a lot of other airports around the world, but especially airports in the UK. In Heathrow, for example, you get 15 minutes to drop off or pick up somebody. I think it depends on the time of the day, but it can be anything from £3 to £7. So they are going to, one day you can be guaranteed it's going to be introduced. Well, commentary in on that. This drop off and pick up charges that will happen, even though they're saying no current plans at the moment. Is this all down to our dear green friend, Minister Eamon Ryan? It's to the likes of him that we're all struggling with the cost of living. We should do as the French do and protest if we're not happy with the issues that are brought in. We've put up with enough rubbish. Let's have a vote on all of these unpopular charges. And well, I don't know if we would want to go down the route of the French, but by God, when the French decide to protest, do they know how to protest? Of course, the current protest that's going on there is over their pension age. They want to bring it, is it from 60 to 62? They're still, even with the introduction of the new pension age, it is still even below, you know, what we are here. I mean, in this country, you don't pick up a pension until you are 66. And actually, I saw just today on the news wires, there was to be a visit to France from next Sunday by Britain's King Charles, and that's been postponed because of the ongoing protests about the pension reform. The French presidency has announced that. So I don't know whether we would want to go down to the level of protest that's going on in France. It seems to be really getting quite nasty at times. 0818 103 103. And then Tess says, Patricia, I wonder, could you ask your listeners out there, do any of them think that they're not getting as much by way of winnings on the national lottery cards nowadays? The reason Tess is inquiring, and she sent me on a photograph by WhatsApp of all the wonderful scratch cards that she got as part of her Mother's Day present. Obviously, children decided to put some of the scratch cards in with Tessa's Mother's Day card. She said in total, €36 worth of scratch cards were purchased for Tess. And she said, I got €4 out of the cards that were bought in one shop. Now, she sent me on the type of cards. They are €5 cards, €3 cards, €2 cards and €1 cards. So there was a complete mix. And she won for herself €4. You would have thought with €36 worth of cards, lottery cards, that you would have won a lot more than that. I don't per se do lottery tickets that often, so I've no way of knowing whether they are giving out less at the moment or that they used to give out more before. I have a tendency that if I'm sending a card to somebody, I don't like sending blank cards. So I'll always, you know, maybe pop in 5 scratch cards in it. I have to say, I have noticed that anyone I've sent them to, probably in the last 2 years, people will come, you know, and you know, people will acknowledge, got your card, got the scratch cards, and you'd always ask, did you win anything? And people, generally speaking, are coming back saying no, that they didn't. So I don't know. Other people noticing that. And I think you only, whatever about if you buy a random card and you don't win, you just think, oh, that's just a bit of hard luck, I didn't win. But when you get that amount of cards, €36 worth of cards, in the photograph there, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. At least 12 cards there must have been Tess has received, and to win €4. 0818 103 103. And just one final text in from Mossy to say, Patricia, with the banks and the government crucifying our people at the moment, I'm assuming Mossy's talking about cost of living crisis, you wonder where's the compassion from these individuals who run all of these organisations. You assume, even though we shouldn't assume, that an individual who runs these organisations, surely they are somewhat Christian. All I want to know is, where's their compassion when people are suffering and people are really struggling at the moment with the cost of living? And that's from Mossy in West Cork. Thank you for that, Mossy. WhatsApping 0862 103 103. And to people, I think every day this week I've had a text or a question in from people wondering, when is the additional €200, the social welfare additional payment that's been made, not to everyone on social welfare but to a cohort of social welfare payments? I know the pensioners are getting it, people on disability allowance are getting it. It's to be paid in April. People are wondering when in April. We still don't have a date on that. We're waiting on a date, but they haven't given an official date. We'll look into it again next week to see can we get an official date. And as I say, I keep getting texts in about that, and that's purely down to, I think, people probably have bills or know they have a bill to pay or something that has to be sorted out in April, and they're wondering, are they going to get the payment in the beginning, the middle or the end of April? As soon as we hear from the Department of Social Protection as to when that extra additional €200 is to be paid, we certainly, I'm not ignoring your texts. We will bring you that information when we get it. John Paul taking your calls, 0818 103 103.
Cork Today on C103.
With Corrigan Insurance's Macroom, now part of McCarthy Insurance Group. They don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. CMIG.ie.
This is the Cork Today replay on C103.
And with some suggestions of movies you might like to watch this weekend, Mark Malone joins me. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Patricia.
And you're very welcome. Okay, two movies. You watched a movie called 65, and then the second movie is Codename Banshee. Let's take a trailer, though, first from 65.
65 finally makes dinosaurs scary again. It will have you on the edge of your seat and is best experienced on the big screen. 65.
I need to get us home.
Ready? Run!
Ah!
Okay, another dinosaur movie?
Yes, it is. It's another dinosaur movie, yeah. And you could hear the guy in the trailer saying, this is the movie that's going to make dinosaurs scary again. So people got very, very excited when we heard about this film. Now, it's been around a while, but it just hasn't been released, which is never a good sign. And I think when it was released, it wasn't released to critics. And that is also not a very good sign. Because when we heard about it a couple of years ago, we thought, oh, this is going to be great. Adam Driver in a dinosaur movie. Because we've been waiting for a really good dinosaur movie since the first Jurassic Park, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're straight away thinking Jurassic Park when you hear the trailer there.
Exactly, the same sound effect as well. I noticed they use for the T-Rex there. But the thing is that we've been waiting for one for quite some time because you know, the sequels and the Jurassic World films. I mean, they've been pretty disappointing. Nothing has ever matched to that first movie. Do you know what I mean? So we were all looking forward to it. As I say, it's been around a couple of years. It was finally released, and it's a disappointment, which is a bit of a shame. Yeah, I'm afraid so. It doesn't really quite work, and it is a pity. It's brought to you by it's written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods. Now, they wrote the first A Quiet Place. I don't know if you saw that movie or not. Mm. It's a terrific movie. And so they've decided to, if we can write, we can direct. Maybe not quite, which is a bit
Stick
of a shame.
To the writing.
Exactly. So we meet Adam Driver, and he is an astronaut. He is a pilot. And there's a kind of a prologue at the start of the film where he is having a conversation with his wife and his young daughter. We find out that his daughter isn't well. She's sick. And so for her treatment, he needs to earn money. And so he takes this job where he's got to go away for 2 years. Now, I'm not sure you would leave your daughter if you have a sick daughter for 2 years. I'm not sure really that would happen. But anyway, he decides to do it. She isn't best pleased, as you can imagine. And so basically what he's doing is he's transporting this group of people in these kind of, you know, these kind of hyper sleep chambers, you know, like an alien where they fall asleep for a number of years.
Yeah, and then they wake them up.
He's not in one of those. I don't know really why. But obviously he's just delivering them, letting them go, letting them there, wherever they're he's bringing them. Because we're not told. For some strange reason, which is very, very odd. I get the impression that there was a lot of studio involvement in this film and there was a lot of stuff cut out and because they never tell us where they're going. But anyway, that's not the point, I suppose. And anyway, what happens is as he's flying along in the spaceship, he gets hit by a meteorite shower, or a meteor shower, I suppose, and he crash lands on this planet. And then the titles come up. And for some reason, and this is what I mean about studio involvement, the studio, I bet you it's the studio decided that they had to tell us at that very moment in time that it's Earth 65 million years ago, hence the title.
Oh,
When dinosaurs so ruled the Earth.
Yeah,
so
walked on Earth.
Yeah, so humans apparently were not on Earth 65 million ago with the dinosaurs, but humans did exist in other planets. So, but I don't know why they felt they needed to tell us that, because I think there was no need. But then again, I think you know, most movie studios think that people are really dumb and stupid anyway, and they felt that they need to tell it because they also wanted it to be I think it's 12s or 13s film. So there's no really explicit violence. There's no real kind of scares in the film at all because they obviously wanted to make this film, you know, for kids. Mm-hmm. And I've seen Adam Driver being interviewed where he said, yeah, it's a dinosaur film for all the family. The problem is, it's a dinosaur film with very few dinosaurs in it. If you remember when I did Cocaine Bear a couple of weeks ago and my daughter's review was needed more bear.
Yeah.
Well, we went to see this together and she said the exact same afterwards. It needed more dinosaurs because most of the dinosaurs that you actually do see are just tiny little things, do you know what I mean? With the odd glimpse of a T-Rex, but not enough, do you know what I mean? And they had the money to spend. I mean, I think it has a $90 million budget. And the other good thing about it is that most of it was filmed, at least. You know what I keep giving out about them making films in big green boxes?
Yeah.
Here at least they did go into the forests of Oregon and Louisiana. So at least that gave it kind of some kind of, you know, feeling of reality. But some of the scenes are really, really dumb and stupid and make absolutely no sense whatsoever. There's one other survivor on Earth with him, and this little girl, she doesn't speak English, which I don't think helps the communication. There's no real charisma, you know, between the two of them, and it's a terrible pity. It's a terrible shame. And the one good thing about it is that it's an hour and a half long, and I'll bet you that there's another hour, half hour somewhere on the cutting room floor. Yeah, somewhere. And I'd like to see kind of that version. And but again, I'm nearly certain that the movie studio staff stepped in here to try and make something that, you know, undercut, I think, the kind of, not so much the talent, but the idea of the film that the directors wanted to portray on screen. And their vision.
But is the trailer right in that you do need to see this on a big screen?
Yeah, well, we saw it on the big screen and we really enjoyed it. I mean, the sound was pretty amazing. But, you know, the daughter is normally very, very hyper and catches my arm and gets very excited. She hardly moved for a good hour. And at one stage, she turned over to me and said, you know, this isn't particularly good. And she was right. Look, it's entertaining enough. I mean, she didn't like it at all. I think she gave it 3 out of 10. For me, I'll give it 6 out of 10. I don't think, like, it's entertaining up to a point, but it could have and really should have been so much better.
But children, particularly little boys, love dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Would they enjoy it?
I think so, yeah. He gets a wound at one stage, which is kind of a little bit explicit, but that's pretty much the only thing, really, that I would find, that people might find offensive.
Okay.
And as I say, there's just not enough dinosaurs, really. It's basically, I mean, if you saw The Last of Us which is a kind of a terrific program that's on at the moment, with Pedro Pascal, I mean, they try to kind of get that kind of emotional kind of response for you with the relationship of this man and this young girl, but it's nowhere near as good as The Last of Us, unfortunately. And it's, in the end, it's a disappointment, but I still recommend people to go and see it if they want to see a dinosaur movie with very few dinosaurs.
And it's called 65, mark it out of 10.
As I say, I'd give it 5 or 6.
Six-ish out of 10. Okay, now your second movie is Codename Banshee.
Yeah, and when I saw it, when I saw the trailer, when I saw the poster for it, I thought, well, obviously there's one reason why this has been released. And that's because of the Banshees of Inisherin, which does happen. I mean, movie studios do this. If they have a really, really low budget kind of film, which they know isn't very good, you'll see it happening quite a lot. Let's say a Pinocchio film comes out, you'll see a really, really cheap kind of knockoff Pinocchio film, which somebody has made, and they'll release it and think, well, if, you know, people might, you know, click on us by accident, and people might click
on this. Mistakenly
come
to it, yeah.
And then I thought, well, you know, there's the Irish involvement, and I thought that could be kind of good, because when I looked at the poster at Antonio Banderas, he had red hair. He dyed his hair red for this, and I thought, oh, maybe he's the Banshee, but he's not, in fact, at all. The Banshee is played by Jamie King here, and it's never explained why she's really called the Banshee, and it has no Irish influence at all, which I thought was a bit of a shame, because I was looking forward to having some kind of Irish influence in the film. And basically what she is that she's a CIA hitwoman, and she just kills a lot of people, and it's 90 minutes of just basically people pointing guns of people and shooting them, and it's the same old cliched stuff we've seen so many times before. I knew I wasn't going to particularly like it very much. It's got a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, so I'm not the only one, and it's a terrible shame, you know, it's a terrible pity. And of course, because I watched Antonio Banderas recently in Puss in Boots, every time he spoke, all I could think of, I had this vision of a cat in the back of my head.
Which doesn't help in a movie like this. That's because tough. It seems the call sign Banshee is well known in the world of professional killers. Who knew?
Well, I'm not quite sure that's true, but you know what I mean. But yeah, look, you know, Jamie King, she does okay. Do you know what I mean? But there are sequences that we've seen a billion times before of just people shooting each other, and it's just so dull and boring. It really is. I can't recommend it at
all. Okay, Mark, Codename Banshee out of 10.
2.
Ooh, okay, one of the lowest. Okay, listen, thank you for that, Mark. Have a lovely week, and we'll chat again next Friday. That is Mark Malone, our movie reviewer. On scratch cards, hi Trish, I put €20 worth of scratch cards into my mum's card on Mother's Day, and she won €10. That's from Bernice in the city. Okay, that's where I leave you for today. Thanks to John Paul and Nick's up next.
C103.
With Corrigan Insurance's McCroom, now part of McCarthy Insurance Group. Want great advice? You know who to talk to. CMIG.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.